And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to it, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Coming up next is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the long Sunday show with lots of flashbacks and even a little bit of brief contemporary news. So strap in and open up your ears and join us. Today is October 22nd, 2017, and Police Brutality Day nationwide for those interested, and we'll be talking more about that on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines.
That was the abbreviated edition of our theme song, Sing Me a Song of Social Significance, from the musical from the 30s, Pins and Needles. I'm Robert Norris, and this is a pre-recorded show, but you can always leave me a message on my phone line, which is also a line for the largely defunct but still barely breathing organization HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, concerned with holding bureaucrats, bum busters, and other bad boy blue shirts in the police department accountable for their policy activities and their extracurricular activities as well. The number to call is 423-4833-423-HUFF, and leaving reports of what you've seen that you think particularly impacts poor people in this community, reports of positive activity by different agencies and individuals is also welcome. So give us a call at 423-HUF and let us know what's happening there. If you feel you want to be interviewed about experiences you've had on the streets, call in to 423-4833 and we may arrange an interview. And for all you money grubbers out there, we are still offering a $500 reward if you successfully find us a 10x10 space that we can negotiate and use for a studio. We do make these shows, or some of us do anyway, at home. That's where I'm doing this. But it does cut down on the variety and regularity of shows for people who don't have the kind of facility to make shows or aren't so inclined to do so. It's kind of burdensome. So you want to make $500, find us a 10x10 space with access to electricity, internet, and a bathroom, and available for a year, which we will pay for, and you get the dough. So do it and grow $500 wealthier. And give me a call at 423-4833 and let me know what your tip is, as well as you can go to freakradio.org. which is the website where you're likely listening to this if you're not in the Santa Cruz area or you're listening to an archive. Put in a tip for Nick of Gear for Good. And I've interviewed Nick before on the show. He was providing free clothing, tarps, sleeping bags, and other donated materials to the sleeping survivors or the freedom sleepers, kind of both groups. And perhaps to people at the post office as well, before they were driven away or coaxed away, as was suggested in the Sentinel article, by the charmed tongue of Police Chief Andy Mills to their new location, which, as I understand it, is there's some significant encampment in the San Lorenzo Park, which I haven't heard of folks getting tickets there yet, but I don't want to provide anyone with false hopes or false sense of security. When I spoke with activist Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs Saturday afternoon, he advised me he hadn't heard of anything either. But Keith is sort of right now somewhat disabled by ongoing physical problems, upcoming surgeries. It's amazing that he carries on the way he does, serving people the food on Saturday and Sunday and helping to cook it up and do other kinds of activities. We tried to check in at a police station so-called community meeting. We missed the proper time, myself and two Food Not Bombs activists. Keith was one of them, Abby and Keith and myself. But I haven't heard anything about citations around the sleeping ban, so it may be that Police Chief Andy Mills' promise of no citations between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. on public property, unless there's a health and safety problem, some other crime, a real crime being committed, although I'm not quite using his words, is actually happening. And I wish I were in a better position to track that. I myself am still without a vehicle, my previous vehicle having decided to end its, the head gas decided to go south, so I don't have a way of getting around as easily as I was able to. But I'm still trying to keep in touch, and if anyone out there has reports of citations, harassment, or alternately, appropriate, kindly, and respectful behavior by authorities toward people engaged in survival sleeping in different spots around town, call me at 423-4833 and let me know. Or email me at rnorse3, that's R-N-O-R-S-E 3, number 3, at hotmail.com. And again, getting back to Nick of Gear for Good, if you have any stuff you want to donate, he will be happy to receive it and pass it on. He seemed to be giving it out freely on the several occasions when I ran into him in the last few meals at the City Hall before those meals ended, and that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. There is a City Council meeting coming up day after tomorrow on October 4th. I can't promise very much on the agenda that looks particularly encouraging or relevant to poor people outside. There's the usual evening housing, affordable housing study session. They're just studying away. They're not acting on rent control. They're not acting on just eviction protection, of course, on any of the meaningful stuff that some city councils in different cities are acting on, but not our Cynthia Chase-led city council. Or maybe we should say the David Terrazas, Cynthia Matthews-led city council. I've done a very thorough or deep analysis of the city council agenda, but I do note they're changing the city council's retention schedule previously passed in 2004, which means, may mean, and it's not clear to me from the staff documents, but others may find themselves able to decipher those documents, which are online at the City Council Meeting Agenda website. Just browse for Santa Cruz City Council Meeting Agendas and you'll find them. Perhaps you can probe this with more clarity than I. It does look to me like I'm afraid, let's put it that way. I haven't got a lot of clarity on it, but it seems to me it's not hard to retain email documents. That just doesn't seem to me to be very difficult to do or very space, time, or cash intensive. So why would they need to change all the retention schedule at this time? Well, there could be plenty of good reasons, but one of the bad reasons would be to eliminate public records so that, I guess I'm kind of sour graping it myself or beating my own drum here, but it could be so that folks like myself who want to be able to look at public records from years ago will no longer be able to do so because those records will have been expunged. And that gets me into the flashbacks, or it could, but perhaps before I do that, I should talk a little bit more about the city council meeting, since this is going to be a short intro. Most of the show will be taken up with flashbacks from 1988, of all years. That's the first year that I actually became active in Santa Cruz in the sort of conventional street agitator kind of way that I've pretty much done ever since, although I don't live on the streets and I'm not homeless myself, or unhoused, if you will. But I have a lot of sympathy with those who are seeking civil rights and trying to avoid abuse and just to survive on the streets. And so 88 is the year when I actually began to acquire a lot of documents and audio, actually, that you probably won't be able to find elsewhere because City Council has long since disposed of, for example, the audios of the oral communications periods that were held and well attended by homeless people during that period of time. But first, a little bit about the upcoming October 22nd, no, 24th City Council meeting. So the meeting day after tomorrow will begin at 12 o'clock, but that's the closed session when you get to talk about items on the closed session but can't hear the council discuss them, you know, because it's hush-hush and all that sort of thing. That starts at noon, and then at 12:30, after you can talk briefly at 12, they'll be excluded from the chambers or the council will go into the back room. You can then come back at 12:30 for the consent, general business, and public hearings, or more popularly known as the afternoon session of City Council. Records retention issue that I mentioned, the so-called update, which is very lengthy and who knows what implications it has, is item 6 on the consent agenda. The consent agenda, as usual, is packed with items. It has a total of 11 items, it looks like. It's items 3 through 14, in which, unless a city council member pulls an item from that agenda at your request in order to have it individually discussed, it gets voted on very quickly as a kind of rubber stamp. And supposedly, you can get Sandy Brown, one of the council members, to pull it if you simply request that be done. They will also give you an option to talk on all 11 items for a total of 2 minutes as a total for all the items. So you get to talk on, I don't know, 15 seconds per item or 20 seconds per item if you needed to talk on individual items but didn't want to ask to have them pulled or couldn't get them pulled by the city council. And as I endlessly say, this is a policy which, while not unique to Santa Cruz, isn't done, for example, by the Board of Supervisors, where any member of the public can insist that an item be pulled so that the public can have an opportunity to comment on it, usually for 2 or 3 minutes per person. And also perhaps a staff member give a report to the council and to the community before the public comment. Destroyed in 2007 or 2008, I could have the date wrong, the year wrong, by council member Ryan Coonerty, now a supervisor, who wanted to supposedly streamline the process. Others suggested it was a way of eliminating critics who would raise objections to consent agenda items, such as myself, who would point out the kinds of huge amounts of money being given to items that didn't involve poor and homeless people and how poor and homeless people were being essentially ignored or criminalized. And that didn't suit council member Coonerty, whose family owns the bookshop Santa Cruz. And he took action to make sure that didn't happen, and the council went along with him. Although individual council members sometimes break away from that. Chris Crone has also on occasion, he hasn't been as bold as Sandy Brown, and he hasn't said, at the request of any member of the public, I will remove an item from the agenda so that member of the public can discuss it without fear or favor. And he is, however, when frequently he has removed items from the agenda that I requested, and generally removed items when requested, but not always. So he's a sometime doer of that. Other council members are pretty hopeless on this issue and just don't do it. They just, I guess, want to get to dinner and go home, and or they think the staff has the final word on these things, because that's what actually happens at City Council. The staff creates reports and recommendations at the council, pretty much rubber stamps. Not entirely, but pretty much. So consent agenda item number 7 involves city participation in a countywide landlord incentive program budget adjustment, where the city is kicking in what? I think it's $50,000 along with, oh no, it's less, $20,000 compared to the county's $50,000. In order to encourage landlords to accept Section 8 tenants, who are, of course, the Section 8 list has been closed since 2011, according to the staff report. The city's funding level will be about $21,000 plus, county $53,000 plus, Watsonville $17,000 plus, Scotts Valley $4,000 plus. And so the landlords are going to get the, they're going to kind of bribe the landlords to encourage them to assist Section 8 people instead of making requirements around these issues for landlords and making them requirements for the development of new housing. And, of course, there is some movement in that direction. But the issue of affordable housing is often a sort of a fluffy cover for housing that isn't really affordable, particularly not to people who are homeless, for sure, because it requires first and last and good credit rating and all kinds of stuff, which is very hard to get. But theoretically, it means that you pay... A person renting something will only pay 30% of their household income for housing costs, which is, of course, not the case in numerous urban areas in the state of California, particularly Santa Cruz, San Francisco, and other cities, San Jose as well. And some of those cities, of course, have, if not rent control, some kind of just eviction prevention, which Santa Cruz does not have. And there's also, of course, I believe, day after tomorrow, there's also a get-together of tenant activists. And that's probably more important than the council meeting, so maybe I should skip to that. But, yeah, let me do that. I don't have anything more than I read on Thursday, but I'll read it again. It's an email I got. The rents are too damn high protest. It's going to be happening Tuesday, October 24th, 4:30 to 6:30 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. That's over on Ocean Street across from the Hotel Paradox, and the Santa Cruz City Hall. It's a protest for housing justice, demanding a freeze on rents and a no-cause and on no-cause evictions. Apparently, according to the email, the march and gathering will begin at 4:30. At 612 Ocean, that's the Resource Center for Nonviolence parking lot. Then there'll be a march to City Hall. Oh, gee, let's hope they don't block traffic. That would be tremendous. That's, of course, notorious when the Resource Center for Nonviolence was supposedly supporting Black Lives Matter activists protesting Ferguson, Missouri injustices in the police murder of Michael Brown. There was this insistence that they not walk in the road because that would be inappropriate. And, of course, some of us walked in the road anyway, and who knows what will happen day after tomorrow on this rents are too damn high protest. I've talked to some of those folks, and they seem pretty outspoken, but you never can tell when the outspoken folks will suddenly become very compliant in order to present a good middle-class image. So doing dispirit those who are more energetic, more active, and more demanding that there be immediate action and not just a symbolic walkie-walkie, talkie-talkie, go-homey-homey kind of thing. At City Hall, there's going to be a 5:15 public comments section. And as I mentioned on Thursday, I think public comment normally is at 5 o'clock at the City Council. Intentional obscenity, by the way. And that seems to be the case, again, according to the agenda, at 5 o'clock. But the rent Far Too Damn High protests to show up by 5:15 at City Hall to publicly comment. Then there's going to be a tenants' rights assembly at 6 p.m. outside City Hall. That's presumably after the oral communications period, you know, where the Mayor Chase smiles at you and says you can talk for 2 minutes, even if there are only three speakers, and they have 30 minutes supposedly for people to speak, they'll give you 2 minutes each. Because, I mean, why should they listen to the public for 30 minutes, for God's sake? I mean, please. It looks like the municipal code amendments for commercial cannabis, which I think may have been passed by the Planning Commission on Thursday, limiting the number of dispensaries in Santa Cruz, limiting the size of the grows in the city of Santa Cruz, essentially kind of a reefer madness restrictions, somewhat modified by a staff report which recommends somewhat more liberal, well, more liberal than the previous sort of drug war prohibition stuff that the city council was doing while it prided itself on supposedly being the most liberal city in California and the most far-out city. And this is the city that banned medical marijuana dispensaries from 2000 to 2005, effectively under the Rotkin Matthews Crone administration. Yes, he was the same mayor who allowed Wham to give out free marijuana on the steps of the city hall to its patients and gave it a special place, essentially created regulations that eliminated access to marijuana for the overwhelming majority of medical marijuana patients who aren't in Wham, weren't in Wham, and couldn't possibly get into Wham. And Wham took no action opposing this. Shame on you, Wham. Shame on you, City Council. And they continued the same prohibition, that is to say the city did, and Wham's silence continued on these issues in 2009 or 10 when the city decided to put a moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries expanding, even though they had very small areas that they were allowed to be in. I think there's it was essentially an area in the Harvey West area, and the rest of it was ruled out of bounds because they were, you know, dangerous drugs, unlike, let's say, pharmacies or bars or 7-Elevens that sell toxic tobacco. Marijuana is so dangerous you can't allow it in most areas of the city. But even in those areas, they've limited dispensaries to two. And that limitation continues, although now it's five because commercial marijuana will become legal for distribution by retail outlets starting in January, I think, it's going to become more difficult for the cities to, they can still criminalize it and restrict it in different ways. And I'm hoping to have Pat Malo on the air. He has gotten back to me by email. He's a member of the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, who I'm equally great, sometimes grateful for and sometimes critical of. And I'll try to catch him when he gets back into town. He's seeing a relative. At the moment, he sent me an email in response to my, "Where are you, Pat?" Anyway, that's not on the agenda, the restrictions on marijuana distribution, cultivation. But, of course, there's still a complete ban on having any place in Santa Cruz. And there will be a complete ban under these proposed regulations by the Planning Commission, which are likely to be rubber stamped by the right-wing council majority, which includes Crone, unfortunately, unless he's seen the light and had some kind of religious conversion since he colluded with his fellow prohibitionists in 2001 and 2002. He was on the city council for 4 years between 1998 and 2002, and he was mayor in 2002. In Santa Cruz, you will not be able to go into a store, a cafe, as you would in Amsterdam, as you would in some places in other states. I'm not sure what the story is in Colorado, Washington, and Alaska, and I'll try to get more information on that if I'm not falling asleep by the time I begin to get around to it again. But you should be able to walk in and order marijuana that's edible or smoke marijuana in a place where it's legal to do so, particularly in cities that are just booze soaked, where you have many, many bars and you have many, many dispensaries of other pharmaceuticals. Admittedly, smoking is becoming highly restricted, and so is vaping, but it's not as restricted as marijuana. Marijuana suddenly, again, continues to be the reefer madness, and Santa Cruz is taking no lead in this at all. However, that will not be on the agenda on Tuesday, as far as I can see, so it's likely to come up in 2 weeks on the second Tuesday in November, would be my guess, unless they have some kind of special city council meeting. There's not a lot on the city council, even though apparently it's going to be a long meeting from noon to 6 with the, let's chatter about affordable housing in the evening. What are they going to talk about? Oh, there's an emergency ambulance transport authorization for a proposal to delay projects to ensure staff to launch the operation of an ambulance transport service. Then there's an update on implementing a management partner's recommendation for improving the planning and community development department. Don't ask me what that's about, although I suppose if you wanted to, you could read through the staff reports and get a far better idea of it than I'm willing to do. There's a neighborhood outreach, engagement, and strategy program so that council members can meet constituents, establish outreach meetings, improve municipal service responsiveness. Does that mean cops will come more quickly to complaints about sleepers in their neighborhood? Hopefully not. Budget balancing, and more. There's a short-term rental section to, if assuming the Coastal Commission okays it, to essentially, I think it's to, authorize more Airbnb bullshit, or, allow it to continue, or only eliminate it in a very slow way. And there are density zoning ordinance amendments, which supposedly affect affordable housing and may well. And then there's a housing study session, which doesn't have too much in the way of documents about the mayor's listening tour. Oh boy, I hate to even talk about this stuff. It's one of four sessions, June 27th, September 12th, October 3rd, October 10th. It's actually the fifth session where they're chattering about affordable housing instead of doing something about it. Let's take a musical break. Thank you. And that's the sometimes intelligible Jonathan Geist, which came out 10 years ago. He never knew what he was fighting for. You're still tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, or stuff that was originally aired on Free Radio. And if you have any comments, thoughts, news items for Free Radio, particularly which might be of interest to me on my show, which has to do with poor and homeless people, give me a call at 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. You may not get me initially, but the machine that records your message will speak to me, and I will speak back to you. So today is also the National Day of Protest against Police Brutality, and part of the Coalition to Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation, or you can be a part of that coalition if you want. According to this online website, it's been mobilizing every year since 1996 for a National Day of Protest every October 22nd, bringing together those under the gun and those not under the gun as a powerful voice to expose the epidemic of police brutality, which, yes, continues. The coalition also works on the Stolen Lives Project, those killed by law enforcement, and that's also on its own separate website. And if you go to the Stolen Lives website, you can get this poster. It looks like a one-page poster, stolenlives.org, which has, looks like, hundreds of names of those killed by U.S. law enforcement. And it's downloadable, although I'm not quite clear how to download it, but you might be better at it than I am. To get more information about the stats of police killings in the United States, you can check out the English newspaper The Guardian, and the website is The Counted. And right now I'm looking at the website that actually simply lists 1,093 police killings in 2016, showing pictures of a majority of them. And it's kind of impressive. I think they've also been following it in 2017, but I haven't found that website yet.
Hey, everybody, it's Maria Boynton. Today we are talking about the National Stop Police Brutality 022 weekend happening right here in Atlanta, Georgia. Tell people who you are.
My name is Yunasha Hamonwolf. I'm an activist and a community organizer.
And, of course, we have Felicia Thomas here.
Yes, I'm Felicia Thomas. I'm Nicholas Thomas's mother, who basically got murdered and killed in Smyrna by the Smyrna Police Department, March 2015.
And what is this weekend?
It's a weekend to support the family, to bring awareness back to mainstream and to the community and to the nation that stopping police terror must stop, and to be able to support the families and to bring resources, solutions to the families.
And, of course, we see Felicia has on her Colin Kaepernick jersey, so that's going to be part of it, too?
Yes, a lot of people, we want to bring the conversation back to why everyone is taking a knee. Colin Kaepernick took a knee for these families,
yes, for us,
for them. And so it's not about Trump, it's about the family. So we want to bring that narrative back and let everybody know that that's the reason why we must boycott the NFL and boycott so many other businesses that are going against the justice, the injustice of the family.
Felicia Thomas, it's a four-day event here from the 19th through the 22nd in Atlanta. Why are you and other mothers involved?
Because we're tired, Maria. We're so tired of our children being killed every day. And it's horrible. You know, none of these police officers are being convicted throughout the country. And it has got to stop. And we have to take a stand, and we're going to continue to fight for our children until we can no longer fight.
And I know that Thursday the 19th, you have something that's going on.
Turnip Day. And that is the day that we are going to basically hit the streets at Troy Davis Park.
Okay.
And then also on Friday, we have our silent march that we're starting at Morris Brown College, mm-hmm. to Hunter Church. And we're going to also do a town hall. Okay. And then Saturday, we're also doing Books and Breakfast, okay. at Beloved Community Church, where we want to do community involvement. So come on now. We're giving out free breakfast and books. And then, as well as Sunday, we're going to meet at CNN headquarters for our major march. And we also have Mike Brown Sr. as our keynote.
It is the National Stop Police Brutality 022 weekend happening in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend. I'm Maria Boynton reporting.
And there are marches and rallies against police brutality in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, in Fresno, maybe one in San Jose. But unfortunately, as far as I know, there is not one today in Santa Cruz. So it has happened in the past in Santa Cruz. HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has done protests on the corner outside the police station in order to demand specific reforms in the police department or fundamental changes, hopefully even going beyond particular reforms. But we focus particularly on selective enforcement against poor people and people of color, use of force, display of force, of accountability for violence and discrimination by police officers, failure to provide information about such things as the Sean Arlt murder or killing back in, I guess it was a year ago around this time. And I haven't yet gotten into a particular series of demands on a confrontation with Sergeant, I should say, Commander, four-star commander, hardly a sergeant, Andy Mills, who I've had a number of recorded conversations with around the sleeping ban and his professed intention to stop ticketing people after 9 o'clock at night, at least for sleeping. And again, we're going to see how that works. But there's plenty of problems that are sort of intrinsic to the very establishment of policing that has nothing to do with really community safety and everything to do with essentially a kind of class policing and class warfare, which has a lot to do with the structure of laws in this society as well. But that's kind of what is not going on in Santa Cruz today. Although, hoist a sign as you walk around. End police brutality, 22nd National Day of Protest to stop police brutality. And a quick update from RV activist Julie Schull that as of Friday, all bathrooms at the Safeway West Side were locked the night before. She's been doing a sort of a monitoring of bathrooms, trying to kind of give me an idea so I can pass on to whoever's listening the sense of just what kind of crackdown is happening by businesses in different parts of town against poor people, whether it be in laundromats, 7-Eleven stores, Safeway, wherever. Just phone me in your tips at 423-4833. Nothing on the City Council's agenda day after tomorrow regarding homelessness. Jessica York, in her long article earlier this week, which essentially quoted Andy Mills, the police chief, around his supposed new policy of not harassing homeless people at night because of the obvious shelter emergency, unless there's a complaint, unless there's it's happening on private property, unless there's some other crime happening, some of which we've called for over the years, we being civil rights advocates with HUF and other organizations. York, at the end of her article, mentions things the city council is supposedly working on. Personal storage, 240-foot shipping containers equipped with individual storage bins on the city-owned River Street lot, which may be the place where people are going to be checked in and then sent to facilities for the winter shelter, up to 100 people when it opens up in November. But right now there is no storage place except, of course, where people are camped. And when they're driven away, they have to carry what they can with them. And when they can't take that stuff along with them. And it gets picked up, often destroyed, supposedly stored, but that's by no means certain. There's, I think, about 1.5 million being given to social service agencies for supposed homeless services. Of course, the homeless lack of services center at Coral Street, as I call that group out there at 115 Coral Street, is now being mandated to open up its showers and its hygiene bay 7 hours per day, Monday through Friday, beginning in early November. You may remember they closed them down in, I can't think it was June of 2015, as well as the meals, in order to serve only a much more limited number of people who they could then show to their funders they were trying to get into housing. And there's no indication of their success rate, at least I've not seen it, in actually providing housing. That's just usually the cover that's supposed to calm the consciences of middle-class people who are watching this. And obviously it also it tends to annoy the right-wing militants, vigilantes, and Take Back Santa Cruz type crew, who I'm told by activist Keith McHenry were successful in stopping a church from even hearing Keith McHenry speak in the last week or two, after a church parishioner came to a Food Not Bombs meeting with his wife, wanted to volunteer, wanted to bring his students along to help Food Not Bombs. And when he came back to his parish and his congregation, Take Back Santa Cruz members of that congregation essentially were able to lobby to stop Keith McHenry from speaking, saying that he hated the police, although he's a pretty mellow guy. I mean, yes, he's got a lot of criticism of some actions by police. I think I'm going to regard it as a disqualification from the human race if you hate the police. There's a reason why some of us take a very skeptical, if not hostile, attitude toward police generally, with some exceptions. It's because of their general mandate, which seems to be to enforce but help create laws that encourage criminalization of poor people and support those who are essentially wealthy. They are, in fact, descendants of, that is to say, police are descendants of slave catchers. That's where they came from. They are essentially defendants of class privilege and class power and those who are the property owners. And if you don't mind private security forces and you think that they're a great thing for defending the privileges and power of those who have power and privileges, well, then you may be embracing police power. Anyway, he also, he gave a couple of reasons why the folks at the parish decided that he wouldn't even be allowed to address their group. The other reason was the, I believe, false claim that the church would lose its tax-exempt status if somebody from Food Not Bombs spoke there. I think this is based on the confusion that if a nonprofit endorses a political candidate, of which McHenry has never been running for any office, I don't think so, that's not relevant. But through that kind, these kinds of misstatements and misconceptions, access to Keith McHenry's thoughts and information on what's going on with the homeless community for this supposedly Christian group was shut down. The upside, I also heard from Keith that their Saturday meal at least went well. You can go down there today to the post office between 4 and 6 and check out what's going on with Food Not Bombs. They're still serving people, although apparently they said there's weren't as many people as last week, which of course is a good thing because it means less people are, it may mean less people are hungry, or it may mean there are other problems, of course. I don't know. Reports that he believes the police chief is definitely trying to get rid of Food Not Bombs at the post office, saying they should move, and suggesting the city may pass legislation so that they can get a permit. The translation for that is that if they don't essentially succumb to city authority, which may mean move along or you won't get a permit, then they will be attacked and forced to deal with police intervention, which we did years ago. And I think some of the flashbacks that I'm going to be playing, and I'm now going to talk about those or shortly, have to do with that period, which began in 1988 when the police, first under Mayor Marty Wormhout and then through then Police Chief Jack Bassett, began attacking, confiscating, seizing, destroying food, and arresting food servers at the town clock, where we were serving food in the winter of 1988-89 and into the spring of 1989. So while City Council is spending tens of millions of dollars on police and parks and rec public safety activities, quote-unquote, without giving us the information about how much of that is going, apparently a significant portion, to the criminal behavior of homeless people in the Poganip and the other parks, by which is meant, if you look at the citations, sleeping, camping, smoking, and being in a park after dark. Some of these ordinances created through police pressure and recommendation as part of a general cultural hostility that police have to poor people being able to sleep in public places or be in public places or be a part of the community, and part of which has to do with catering to a right-wing minority in the community. There's nothing about researching how much is actually going for this kind of futile and abusive and probably illegal or unconstitutional kind of enforcement activity. You also have apparently part of the homelessness report, which came out 2 weeks ago at City Council, and when there's nothing on the council now, that we were assured that there was some fast-track stuff coming up. But nothing is happening on this City Council meeting day after tomorrow. But part of this homelessness report talked about and was mentioned by Jessica York in her article on Chief Mills' new Leave Him Alone at Night policies, supposedly. The bathrooms would be more closely monitored and assessed, not opened up, not made available at night, not allowed for additional hand-washing purposes to perhaps curb hepatitis A, but assessed, you know, sort of like the housing, affordable housing issues will be discussed again for the fifth successive housing session evening City Council meeting day after tomorrow at City Council. But again, you, as I mentioned before, you can join the crowd of folks outside who are talking about real renter protection starting at 4:30 and going until 6 or 6:30 and perhaps join them and help them.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to someone who made my presidency possible. Please welcome Kellyanne Conway. But Melania, Kellyanne, I think it's pretty obvious at this point that nothing can stop me.
Oh, well, maybe just one thing, Mr. Trump. He's up in his tower all night long, ranting and a-roaring like an orange King Kong. Soon his enemies will feel the heat every time the Donald goes
tweet, tweet, tweet.
Someone stop him.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Can't we block him?
Tweet. Tweedly deep.
Watch out for Donald, because he's really on the dare tonight.
The thing that's so great about me is my humility. Hashtag super humble.
Tweet, tweet.
As part of my transition, I will meet with foreign leaders like Barack Obama.
Tweet, tweet.
The Broadway musical Hamilton is overrated. Boom. Everybody who can't get tickets should boycott.
tweet, tweet. He pounds his opponents, pundits, and press, calling them
pathetic, you're a loser, a mess.
This one is crooked, that one cray cray. 140 characters can go a long way.
There's a crisis.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
With his devices.
Tweet. Boeing tweet.
Maybe Melania can make everything come out all right. If I can start my cyberbullying campaign tonight. Delete. 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 Delete.
So you're now going to hear a series of archival audios from 1988. That's almost 30 years ago. Actually, it's 31 years ago. 29 years ago. Sorry about that. However, before we get into the 88 stuff, let's finish up activist Keith McHenry's appearance on the right-wing KSCO radio station Saturday before last, which we played half of on the Thursday show here at Free Radio. If you want to hear the whole thing, you can actually go to the KSCO.com website and look for the Saturday special, which is a two-hour show, which KSCO owner Michael Zwirling does every Saturday. That's going to happen first, where Keith Fields questions most of them hostile about Food Not Bombs. Then we're going to turn to the Santa Cruz City Council way back in 1988, as it essentially kills a proposal by its own task force, Human Relations Task Force, headed by a woman who would shortly become a council member, Jane Yokoyama, and join the ditto head chorus at City Council. But what she was proposing then, after public hearings, was a proposal to modify the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance so that there would be ticketing only on complaints and after warnings for people in vehicles, a very mild modification, which is still not, of course, the law, and I don't think it is even the practice. Although ticketing of people in vehicles for camping and sleeping, I think I have not tracked it carefully, but I haven't heard a lot of it happening. Some of it does, I think, but not as much as was happening then. And the City Council, you'll hear a presentation by Jane Yokoyama, as I said, a community organizer who then ran on the establishment scan pseudo-progressive ticket and won in the fall elections of 1988. The person who was chairing the City Council meeting, the mayor at that time, was a man named John Laird, who has since been used the City Council as a stepping stone to an assembly position in the state legislature. He may have even gone further or gone sideways, I'm not sure, but his position was very reactionary on homeless stuff, and he took actions to cut back the amount of time people could speak at City Council, because significant numbers of homeless people were coming to City Council to speak. I myself was doing a lot of street organizing, tabling on Pacific Avenue with a petition called the Petition for Homeless Rights, which simply looked for some sort of elementary changes, opening up bathrooms, sort of the same kind of things we're talking about now. But in those days, actually, we had thousands, literally several thousand signatures. The second flashback in 1988 is going to be an Earthbeat KZSC program, which features a number of homeless activists who are facing the courts. Charles Gray is the most famous among them that I remember, but there were others. There were three main activists, Brian Koepke, Jane Immler, and Linda LeMaster, who has spoken on the air dozens of times, and some members of the community may still be familiar with her. Jane Immler was, of course, a very famous activist in the 80s who came here, went on a hunger fast, and helped create the first cold and rainy night shelter that lasted for a year and then went away. And also the next year, in a second fast, helped create the River Street mini shelter, now known as the River Street Shelter. I call it a mini shelter because of the small number of people that it shelters, Linda LeMaster was also involved in that. And Brian Koepke was an activist who later signed on with the what became the Free Meal Program or the Homeless Community Resource Center, the predecessor to the Coral Street Homeless Lack of Services Center. He was a homeless person himself who was on the cutting edge of things. We didn't always agree, but sometimes we did. The third 1988 flashback involves five activists. I was one of them. Attorney Ray Glock-Grunike, Charles Gray, as I mentioned before, and then two women from UCSC who were arrested in the sleepouts that began to happen in massive numbers at City Hall during the City Council evenings, when the City Council sort of cut short debate and ignored the needs of homeless people. Finally, I'll be playing the last three oral communications periods of 1988 in November and December, when significant numbers of homeless people came to City Council. I was arrested there on a false charge of false information because my family name is Robert Kahn. The name I've used in Santa Cruz and was using then is Robert Norris, and the police chief, Jack Bassett, in what seemed to me to be an attempt to discredit my credentials among homeless people and among middle-class people, had me arrested and charged with using a false name for purposes of fraud. But since there was no fraud he could even allege, and didn't, it became simply an opportunity to arrest me, handcuff me, put me in jail, take the signs that I had and destroy them, the political signs that I had brought to City Council. But people proceeded to speak before the City Council anyway on those periods of time. And the charges, once I was held in jail for 2 days, were shortly dropped. And we continued to mount protests against the sleeping ban and the criminalization of the poor in Santa Cruz. To not much clear effect. At that time, we had a bunch of people in power who called themselves progressives. That included Don Lane, who had just entered his first term, who was probably the most liberal of all of them, but who quickly essentially abandoned his liberal positions around homeless issues in an attempt to work with other members on the council, something we're familiar with in the case of Micah Posner, and probably the other two council members who currently on the council supposedly are part of a left-wing or more progressive dissident minority, Chris Crone and Sandy Brown, although they've taken some stands on occasion which don't just involve minority votes, but also doing things like attempting to raise some issues by demanding things of the staff, or I should say requesting things of the staff. But they are pretty quiet voices around these issues anyway. And I have to say that Sandy Brown continues to refuse to keep the commitments that she made, fulfill the promises that she made way back this spring in requesting things of Martine Bernal, the city manager and true boss of the city, as well as Mauro Garcia, the head of Parks and Rec, whose department has given out more stay-away orders than any other agency, as well as requested emails to other agencies, the point being to get a council member to pressure the staff to give straight answers on some issues. And if they don't, they don't. But at least a council member has made that request in writing. It hasn't been fulfilled, and it can become a basis not just for some kind of election issue in terms of electing Tweedledee or Tweedledum at the next election, but on getting rid of the staff or exposing a kind of militant reaction in the staff, who are really the conservative bosses of the city. With Keith McHenry on KSCO, part two of what we had played earlier, on Thursday, Go Keith.